And welcome to the officially unofficial podcast for HBO's Game of Thrones. I'm your host, Mad Brew.
I'm Aaron.
And we are going to be covering episode 3, Lord Snow. It's directed by Brian Kirk, and it was written by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss.
Have you seen any of the stuff that Brian Kirk has done?
I think I watched an episode of The Tudors once, but probably not his episode.
Really? Because he's done a few Dexter's, Tudors, The Riches, Luthor, which is a BBC series starring the... I forget what the guy's name is, but he played Stringer Bell in The Wire. And he's also done a couple episodes of last season's Boardwalk Empire, which I want to get into. I've seen the first 3 episodes. Pretty good.
So, yeah, I haven't seen any of that.
Lots of HBO stuff and Showtime stuff.
I think I caught an episode of The Tudors while one of my friends was watching it, so it's not something I picked out myself.
Right.
Speaking of The Wire, there's some Wire family people in this, isn't there?
I will get to that as we get there, because I've got a lot. You know, Wire is my... It's on the Mount Rushmore of TV series.
For me. I know. You give it lots of praise.
It is probably, I think, the best television show ever.
That's a lot.
While we're giving out credit, I want to shout out the dude who made our theme song for our podcast. His name is Alert.
That's Alert with TM. A trademark.
He's trademarked it. And it's his 70s metal step remix of Game of Thrones theme, and you can find him on soundcloud.com/alerttm.
Makes you want to behead a bunch of people with swords.
It does. Yeah. It's ready for me to get that ice and start cutting fools down.
So we're recording this in the year 2012, but this episode actually came out May 1st of last year. And it is... In the order progression, this is one of the few shows that actually increase its viewership over time.
Yes.
So this had more viewers than the episode before it, which had more viewers than the episode before it, which was the pilot. Going into this, I think before we get into the playback, there's no changes in the intro. So I think that means that we're pretty much dealing with the same stuff.
No new locations.
No new locations. But... The third episode in, and we're already smacked in the face with a shit ton of new people.
Oh, yeah.
New characters. You didn't even get time to get used to the old characters, and then they just drop them on you.
Like I said, it's brutal. One of the main reasons that I haven't gotten through book 4 is that I realized that I wasn't assimilating the new characters very quickly. So I actually, I know this is anathema for people to read the book, but I actually read the books after I saw the first season, and I thought book 2 was excellent. Book 3, I started to have trouble following, and then book 4, there's so many new characters and so many changes. I just
Yeah, okay. You need to break out a notebook, right, to keep track of crap.
I'm going to wait for HBO to catch up. So it's a good time to talk about our spoiler policy too. Basically, we do not talk in the podcast about anything that happens after the episode that we're currently reviewing.
That's right.
So if we have any book knowledge, which Mad Brew has not read the books, nope. I have read up to book 3.
I read the first chapter of the first book.
We're not going to divulge that until we actually will play our theme song again at the end of the cast, and then we'll have some spoiler topics after that.
That's right. So if you don't like spoilers, it's time to hit the stop button when you hear Alert's dubstep theme come back on.
Right.
Another thing, even though we've only got two episodes here, it seemed to me like nothing bad happened this episode. Nothing like, little children getting pushed out of windows and stuff
no
like
one
that.
Got killed. There was no
no dire wolves slayed.
No really boobies either, even though we were in a whorehouse.
There was some boobies there.
Was I thought they were all fully clothed. I saw this 2 weeks ago and I took my notes, so I thought they all had
no
tops
I thought
on.
When they bring in Kat, there was boobs,
maybe.
Yeah,
that's why she was so incensed.
And then I think this episode really nails home that this is about political intrigue.
Yes.
So, with that, let's get to the first scene.
Political intrigue and fathers and sons and progeny. Those are
it's all about relationships.
Yeah.
So, dramatic relationship. And with that, we get to the first scene, which I'm calling Welcome to the Iron Throne.
Uh-huh.
So, the king's entourage, I mean, we really just see the Starks, right, riding in.
Right.
But they were with the king's entourage. So, they have just landed in King's Landing. Mm-hmm. And it looks like it's a stark contrast to Winterfell. Kind of, it has a Mediterranean feel. There's some, Saracen type domes and kind of like
Those are all filled and malted. Did you know that?
Well, that would explain all that.
Like the King's Gate and the gate to the Red Keep that we see later were all actual legitimate real-life fortifications.
Man, you know that's interesting because I actually, when I was in the Marine Corps, we ported Malta once.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't get to do any
sightseeing. Did you go into Littlefinger's whorehouses? I hear they're the best in town.
There may have been whores involved, but it may have not been Littlefinger's.
Stay away from Big Fingers.
You don't like where they put those.
Have we actually started recapping yet?
Yeah, we're King's Landing. We're describing King's Landing, and then we had this real-life jump.
Right.
So anyways, it was filmed in Malta, which would explain the Arabic-type motifs in the architecture, which is definitely a big contrast to the Ireland-based Winterfell. Mm-hmm. But as soon as they get there, Ned is, like, attacked by a guy in a black vest that says, "Hey, the small council's convening, and you need to be there." That's since he's the Hand, right?
Right.
So
not a moment's rest. Doesn't he get to unpack?
He gets smacked in the face with business as soon as he gets there. So he sends his girls off and says he'll be home in time for supper.
I also get like a little premonition of or preview of what Ned's rulership style is going to be, because this guy, you know, one of the court officials is like, "Would you like to change something more, official, my lord?"
Yeah, and something more appropriate. And he kind of like,
Ned just stared like...
He stares him down, right? And kind of tilts his head like...
Like, if this isn't important enough for me to be summoned right away, then it's important enough to
go. Oh, I'm sorry. I left my dress armor at home.
Right. Hell, that might be his nicest
That outfit. Is probably his nicest stuff. Yeah, I don't have anything nicer than this, buddy.
Sorry, I don't have any summer dress.
Which, you know, it's kind of funny. This appearance thing comes into play in a later scene, too. Mm-hmm. It's part of the same scene. So he comes in, he starts heading towards where the small council is convening, and he's walking into, it's almost like a cathedral-type thing. You have stained glass windows, and he comes across Jaime Lannister kind of chilling out at the bottom of the...
dais? Do you call that a dais?
A dais. Dais? Anyways, at the foot of the Iron Throne. I think this is the first time we saw it, except for... In preview type stuff.
Yep.
So there's a big throne of melted swords.
And we get some backstory between Ned's father and brother and Jaime as well.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I want to point out that the way they handle exposition and information dump is, I mean, it's pretty clever how they kind of couch it in these interactions between people.
It's very true to the book, too.
And here we find out that Ned's father and brother was burned right in the very room for the Mad King and like 500 courtesans.
Right.
Or whatever. You know, people of the court.
Right.
And, you know, Ned was like, "And you just sat there and watched it."
Right.
And he's like, "Yeah, me and 500 people sat and watched it."
Right.
I
think that this is the first attempt to kind of give us Jaime's side of the story. Because it's weird that Ned holds contempt for Jaime as the Kingslayer when he, I guess, expected him to leap to his brother and father's defense and defiance
of
the king before.
You want to know what the contempt is? He didn't face him in combat. He plunged his sword into his back.
Yeah, but
so he's an assassin. It's not a battle. It was an assassination.
Like Ned said, like Jaime said, I don't think it would make any difference for your sense of my honor whether I'd put it in his belly or in his back.
Maybe.
And honestly, we don't know the details yet. I want to talk about this a little bit in spoilers anyway.
All right. Well,
but we kind of see Ned's philosophy versus Jaime's. Jaime is like the expedient way to get to things is the right way, and Ned places a premium on you got to do it the right way.
Yeah, and there's a lot of clever banter that goes back and forth in the scene. I think this is the second best scene of this episode.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's not the best scene.
Well, it had the classic, which is from the book, that the king shits and the hand wipes to kind of demean that it's like this is not a prestige position, especially working for this king.
And Ned quips back, you know, a couple times, and he's like, "Oh, your armor." He's like, "It's handsome armor, not a scratch on it."
Right.
He's like, "Well, you know, a lot of people's taking swings at it, but always miss." And he's like, "Oh, you pick your opponents well." And
right.
There's a lot of back and forth banter, but I think at the end, Ned kind of wins because Jamie either gives up or doesn't have a witty comeback for his last remark, which says something about, you know, you served when it was safe to serve.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, you know, it's like you picked your opportunity, you know.
Which is a Lannister thing.
Right. Yeah, they're opportunistic.
Yep.
And then he walks out on Jamie and comes and finds his way to the small council, where he's full of more disappointment because they're ready to convene the small council, and he's like, "Well, are we going to wait on Robert?" And
so naive.
Like, right. He doesn't understand how things roll.
I mean, Robert's all but told him this in the last episode.
It's right. Like, he needs somebody to run.
I need you there so I can go and whore and hunt and drink myself to an early grave. There's not a lot of attending meetings in that.
Eddard had some hopeful wishes that was just, you know, him talking out his ass. But no, that's really the case. All he does is get drunk.
So let's talk, before we get into it, let's talk about the small council itself. You want to introduce us?
I don't have the names, but you have the Meister. Okay.
You've got
the old guy.
The Meister, Parcell, I believe is his name.
And you have Littlefinger.
Who is played by sci-fi favorite Julian Glover. Do you recognize that name?
That guy would be from Star Wars, right?
He's General Veers, leader of the invasion of Hoth, and Walter Donovan, the rich American millionaire who is seeking the Holy Grail in Indiana Jones 3, or The Last Crusade.
So he's awesome at villains.
He is pretty good at villains, yeah. And now he's played, so that should maybe tell you. Also,
yeah.
We have Peter Littlefinger Baelish, who's played by Aidan Gillen, who I recognize from The Wire.
He was the mayor of Baltimore, right?
He plays this, wait for it, a scheming, backhanded, fast and loose with the truth politician.
Oh.
It's a real stretch for him to play Littlefinger.
He's typecasted.
Yeah. And
he does a good job of playing a little wormy bastard, though.
He is.
Yeah. But, you know, what's his function on the council, though?
He's the treasurer.
So, okay.
He's master of coin. Right?
I gotcha.
And then you've got Renly, who is the king's brother, younger brother. He's got an older brother, Stannis, who we have not met yet.
And Varys, right?
And Varys, who's one of my favorite, right under Tyrion from one of my favorite characters.
Really?
Yes.
Maybe it's because he's a eunuch.
You can't respect a man without balls. I get that. But, yeah,
and he's bald.
He's a very cool character. He's got some of the best lines, and that's what I look for in
okay. Yeah.
You know.
He's a shady bastard.
He is a shady bastard.
Because he's the master
spy. Tell me a person who isn't outside of Ned.
Jon Snow.
Okay,
outside of the Starks.
Daenerys is not shady. She's pretty much straightforward.
Yeah.
Yeah, outside of Starks and naive 13-year-old girls wed the horse lords, not a whole lot of, you know, white and black characters here. Lots of shades of gray.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know. So it makes me wonder who I'm going to be rooting for at the end.
Also, point of fact, someone else that's on the small council we don't meet yet is the Lord Commander of the Night's Guard, Sir Barristan Selmy, which we meet later, but he's also, since he's attending to the king, I doubt that he makes most of these meetings either.
Gotcha. I didn't realize he was on the council.
So, anyway, go on. Now we've made our introductions.
So not only is Eddard upset that the king doesn't participate in these running of the kingdom, he also finds out that the kingdom is actually pretty far in debt.
Yeah.
It's what, 3 million dragons to the Lannisters alone?
And 6 million in total.
Right.
So
that's, they're in hawk, man. And now he's wanting to run a tournament.
Yeah.
He's wanting to run a tournament with cash prizes.
With like 40,000 Targaryens was the top prize?
I don't know, but it's like, yeah, he said, no, we're not going to do that.
Right.
The damn kingdom can't afford it.
It's a waste.
But I don't think the council is having any of that.
So we know that Ned's neither Republican or a Democrat, because right away he's not wanting to spend money.
Yeah, I don't think bipartisanship applies to Westeros.
Right. He's an independent.
Is he our Ron Paul?
He's Ron. Someone argue whether he is Ron Paul, but he's definitely wanting to bring balance to the Westeros budget. Damn it.
He's the Anakin Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to bring balance.
Yeah.
Uh,
When we move on, that's pretty much the gist.
Yeah, that's pretty much just that scene. And we go to another scene, which is somewhere else in King's Landing, and I call it the Prince Bitch, or everyone who isn't like us is an enemy.
Right.
Or who isn't us is an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it starts out. Cersei's kind of attending Joffrey's wounds from,
his light scratches. Yeah. Honestly, for being mauled by a direwolf, I think he got off pretty easy.
And then, but they end up, they're like, he's obviously sour about it because, one, he's injured.
Uh-huh.
And two, the girls saw him be a pussy.
Right.
And so Cersei's trying to, I don't know, comfort him and Petty's ego, and they're like, when you're king, you can make the truth, and we can convert this whole story into some big, bad battle where you save the maidens and stuff like that.
Slay the direwolf.
A bunch of bullshit. but I think, I don't know what the point of the scene was.
I think it was to show, number one, how impetuous that Joffrey was.
I don't think they need to show that anymore.
Yeah, but he's like, but not just in life, but he just doesn't understand. And, you know, well, so sets us up for
later.
He's
obviously going to be a shitty king.
He's like, why don't we just take over the Northerners? Because they have 10,000 men. Well, they'd fight for me. I'm the king. And she's like, no, you little idiot.
Right, because the North is too big and too wild.
But also it shows the Lannister's credo, everyone who isn't us is an enemy. And that's, you know, one of the themes that has come up, just like when Tyrion was talking to Jaime at breakfast last episode. You know, sometimes I wonder if you're with us. And Tyrion's like, You know, the family comes first, so that's a very core value of the Lannisters. Probably the core value.
I think the most interesting statement in this whole scene is where Cersei, because Joffrey's trying to worm his way out of having to marry Sansa, because maybe he doesn't want to marry some girl who knows he's a pussy.
Well, yeah. So he doesn't want to marry anyone that's met him for at least 5 minutes, basically.
Okay, yeah. So, but Cersei pretty much tells him to do the exact same thing his father does that pisses her off all the time, which is whoring around, right? Keep some mistresses.
Right. Well, I think she's wanting to pay the misery forward, you know?
I guess. I have no reason to like Cersei.
No, like I said, they don't.
I thought that maybe the motherly side of things would snatch me, but after this scene, I just don't give a shit about either one of these characters.
That's why I said last week that they gave her that extra book, you know, outside of the book scene just to try to soften her because it's a pretty tough swallow. I mean, eventually I think you come around to pitying her, but it's kind of pity tinged with hate. It's hitty.
It's hitty.
Pate. I feel nothing but pate for this woman.
This scene I could have probably done without.
Moving on.
The next scene is War is Easier Than Daughters. And this is where Ned comes back after convening the council. And he tries to appease Sansa after, you know, he killed her direwolf with a doll. Right. And then she gets all upset and rages off because, you know, she hasn't played with dolls since she was 8.
Right.
And he's just like, yeah, this trying to deal with... He doesn't understand. He doesn't know how to deal with daughters. And obviously it's like, I would think that Sansa is too old for a doll, but obviously he has no point of reference or something.
Right. Well, he's probably a little out of... Ned probably has a hard time relating to Sansa, especially since his only other daughter is such a hellfire, you know.
Speaking of which, he finds her in her room playing with Needle, right?
And this was filmed deliberately. Like, she's like, I know I'm not supposed to have this. I want to answer the door after I've been sent to my room as a punishment with this sword, whip it around just to kind of show my old man.
Oh, yeah, it was obviously a defiant type thing.
Like, she could have hid that, but no, it's like,
no,
I've got
she
this.
Wants, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she doesn't hide. I don't think she hides what she wants to be.
Right.
Which is, she tells him right out here, you know, he's like, you know, little ladies don't play with swords. And she's like, well, you know, I don't want to be a lady.
Right. I like that line. She's like, this is no toy. And she goes, I'm not playing.
Right. And he asks, you know, do you know even know the first thing about sword fighting?
And she quotes Jon Snow.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, you stick him with the pointy end, right? Yeah. So, which was every time I see the, I'm trying to think of the actress's name that plays Arya.
I don't know.
With an M. Mm. Her first name begins with an M. But, anyways, anytime she's on.
I'll look it up for you.
Anytime she's on screen, I'm completely glued to what's happening on screen.
That's because you see your daughter in that.
Do you think so?
I can't believe
are
you're
psychoanalyzing me here.
No, I just can't believe you're like.
So you don't think if I didn't have a daughter, I wouldn't be so invested?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying, man.
So you're saying that her performance is not as good as I'm saying?
No, I think it's great, but I think that I think your daughter reminds you a lot of Arya.
I think
and,
so.
And that she's very much your daughter.
Yeah. My daughter's a hellfire, too.
Right.
She likes fighting.
Nothing wrong with that.
yeah, what's the actress's name? I want to get her name.
Keep going. I'm looking it up, man.
Well, after this scene, because that's pretty much the end of that scene. After this scene, we move back to Winterfell with a crow. Bran wakes up. There's a crow at the window. And the old woman that's tending to Bran says, you know, don't listen.
I love this scene.
Don't listen to them. They're crows are all liars.
Right.
Which didn't quite make sense to me. I guess maybe because he was guiding him in his dream?
No, I mean, so, like, crows in the Westeros are kind of, like, bad omens because you usually only send
What's the difference between a crow and a raven?
I don't think there is one.
So, they can't... So, all the messages they bring are lies?
No, but they're bad. She's trying to discount, like, the fact that... crows are bad omens, ravens are bad omens, and they're sitting there one out the window squawking at him. She's basically saying... Because, like, Ned's got a phrase in the book that I don't think ever was used in the... series where he says dark wings, dark words. Like every time he sees a raven, because he's like, no one sends a raven if it's good news because you can send it slower. It's only dire, bad, oh shit, this has to get there now words that come. So he's like, when he sees a raven coming with a message, it's like, shit, now what?
Right. And right after that, she's like trying to tell him some kind of, I don't know, fairy tale stories or something like that. But he doesn't want any of that.
Did you actually, that was kind of a cool that I forget what tale she told him. Like, you always liked his stories. That's actually a collection of short stories that George R. R. Martin wrote. That's like a prequel to Game of Thrones. They're set like 100 years before Game of Thrones.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Huh. So when they refer to his, they're referring to
They're actually Martin? Referring to outs. Yeah, stuff that's written by him.
Breaking the fourth wall.
They are.
Totally that's some cool stuff.
Maisie Williams is who plays
Maisie
Arya.
Williams. Yeah, okay, I remember that now. So instead, he wants the stories that make you afraid. Mm-hmm. She's like, boy, you don't know fear. And then so she goes on to tell us the story about the, I don't know, the longest winter where the White Walker is pretty much decimated.
Is that the kind of story you want to hear? And then, he's got the sheets up by his nose like, yeah. And so she goes like full throttle. That was just a warm-up.
Yeah, it's like, okay, breaking out the good stuff now. But then his brother Rob busts in and is like, hey, what are you doing, scaring him?
Right.
And she's like, just tell him, you know, giving the little lord what he wants to hear.
Right.
So,
which, by the way, the specific stories are The Tales of Duncan and Esquire Egg, which are a series of novellas written by George R. R. Martin.
Oh,
so
really?
If you can't get enough Game of Thrones, check that out if you want to hear some prequel stuff.
You'll know what this won't... Oh, also, didn't the actress that played this lady die?
I had that written in my notes. Yeah, this was her last professional performance. Her name is Margaret John. She's 84 years at the time of filming and died February 2nd, 2011. This episode is actually dedicated to her.
That's unfortunate because I thought that she... Her role is pretty good. I thought she played it up pretty well.
Yeah.
Being the caretaker, storyteller.
I don't think she appears in any of the other books, though, so... If she's going to die...
Well, yeah. Might as well end it on a good performance in the Game of Thrones, I guess.
Yeah, no Matrix style. Oh, we got a new Oracle now. So, anyway, it was a good performance.
And then at the end,
This whole scene, though, is nothing but to establish that Bran has amnesia. There's not going to be Bran wakes up and, oh my God, Jamie threw me out the window.
Right, because we want to know what he knows. Does he remember? Right.
And he remembers nothing.
He doesn't remember. But we do know one thing. He wants to die.
Yeah.
He'd rather be dead.
Yeah.
And Rob tells him, you shouldn't say shit like that.
Right.
And he's like, well, I'd rather be dead.
We need Tyrion to come down here and give you a speech about life and how it's full of possibilities and death is so final.
Yeah, the cripple to cripple speech.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving on. So after this, we go back to King's Landing, and this is where we see Caitlin and her, well, I guess just one guy, the guy with the white hair.
Sir Roderick Castle.
There you go.
Master of Arms at Winterfell.
The Master Arms. They come trying to sneak into King's Landing, but they're intercepted immediately.
They rolled a one on their
stealth failed. And King's, I guess, they look like royal guards. Royal guards come up and intercept them.
So I don't know if they're supposed to be the gold cloaks. I can't remember if they look different in the
series. Well, I know they look like the same guys that are standing...
They're like the city
outside,
guard.
Okay, well, they're the same guys standing outside the throne room when Ned...
Then they definitely are. They call them the gold cloaks, okay. The city guard.
So, they stop him and said... And, of course, they freak out because they think they're found out by the Lannisters, but... Right. It's really her old friend, Littlefinger. And they escort her to his brothel.
So the backstory, I'll go in that, I guess, in spoilers.
We didn't know until now that Littlefinger was a pimp, though, right? Until this scene?
I don't think we've actually met Littlefinger until this episode, so no.
But I'm talking about...
Among other things.
In the small council, we didn't...
Right.
We didn't know.
He
ran the brothels.
Right. Among other things.
Right.
So I think at this scene...
You're talking about some backstory here.
Yeah, I'm going to get into that in the spoiler section. But I think in this scene, we're kind of led to believe that Peter and Varys are good guys that are here to help. That's kind of like the thrust of, you know, they're kind of like suspicious at first, but we find that like Peter loves Kate, you know... childhood friends, and Varys is helping them, you know, has got this information. If he wanted to sell them out, you know, he could have, and he's got basically treason. If he wanted to sell them out and have them killed,
right,
he could do
Varys,
it right away.
It seemed like Varys knew she was coming, right?
Yeah,
because he asked for the dagger.
And also knew about the dagger. Yeah, he knew everything at this point. He probably read the
missives.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. He knows him, and his business is to know everything.
Yeah, but did she send message ahead to anybody? That's the question.
No, I don't think so.
So then how do you know?
Because he's got birds in Winterfell, he said. He's like, he's got little birds that tell him things, and his birds are also in Winterfell, he says. So he got word somehow.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I didn't know if she had sent I was kind of confused, like, okay, yeah, I got it. They kind of figured out that she was on her way, but I didn't... With the daggers... Him asking for the dagger, I wasn't for sure if she had meant to talk to Varys to begin with. You know what I mean?
No. She wasn't going to do that. I don't think she even probably knew Varys, except for by reputation.
Mm.
So we find out then that this knife used to belong, because she's like, whose knife is this?
It's Peter's knife.
Yep, and he's got one over on Varys for once, which paints them as having a rivalry. Which is kind of cool. They laid the groundwork for that. But it's his knife, and he lost it to a bet to Tyrion Lannister in the last tournament.
Yeah. Court. You know, and this kind of... At this point, I'm like, okay. Yeah, so it's Tyrion's, but is it?
Right.
Is it Tyrion's?
Well, do you trust...
Baelish? Yeah. Is Baelish telling the truth? Was it really his?
Yeah, you don't know.
Or if it was, if it was Tyrion, did he actually just hand it over and said, yeah, have the assassin use this on Bran?
Right.
Which... I don't know. It makes me, because, you know, I've liked Tyrion up until now, and if he's willing to have a little kid off, that kind of pisses me off. Makes me not want to like him at all.
Right. There's very few 100% likable characters in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, well, I can deal with, you know, general douchebaggery, but...
Right.
But,
killing,
you know,
kids.
Killing
draw
kids,
a hard line there.
That's where I draw the
What's
hard
wrong
line.
With you, Mike? What's wrong
That's
with you, Madrid?
Fucked up.
Moving on.
Even by middle age standards, I think. So... And then after this, we go to the wall.
Yep, we do.
And we see Jon Snow training with all the rapists and
he's
murderers.
He's cutting through these boys like wheat is what he's doing.
Yeah, he beats the hell out of them.
He's taking them on one and two at a time.
And that's when the trainer, I guess he's the Master of Arms.
Sir Alistair Thorne.
Who's a dick.
He's the Sergeant Hartman of this series.
Sergeant Hartman.
Yeah.
Is that from Band of Brothers?
No, Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, he's an ass. But, so he's like, congratulations, you're the least useless one here.
He calls him Lord Snow.
Lord Snow.
Which is, I think it's brilliant, because he's basically making the other boys hate him.
Yeah.
And also making fun openly of him being
a bastard. Of being a bastard, yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's like a two birds with one stone thing.
Yep.
Yeah, he's pretty good at his job pissing people off. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, this is pretty much it. You see Tyrion talking with Ser Mormont,
the Lord Commander of
the
Night's
Lord
Watch.
Commander of the Night's Watch.
Now, did you know at this point that that is actually Jorah Mormont's father?
No. I don't know if we had a name yet at this point in time.
Okay, right. I think you get it by the end of the episode.
Yes, we get it by the end of the episode, but at this point in time, the first time I watched this, I didn't make the connection at all.
No, I didn't make connection.
Because I didn't know that dude's name down there with the Dothraki.
Right.
I didn't know that guy's name.
If you read the books, it really hammers it home in this next scene. But now, what did you think about, he said, a crow comes bearing good news and ill. The good news is obviously Bran woke up. What is the ill news? That he can't walk? That people think that he was not going to... I thought that was common knowledge that he would never walk again, even before he woke up. Obviously, surely they didn't put, and also the Lannisters probably did it. I don't know what he meant by, it's like a crow comes bearing good news and ill.
Yeah, it seems like I had an idea when I watched this, but now that you bring it up...
Well, listeners, if you got an idea, email us at the notes.
Maybe it was, like... He's broken. He's alive, but broken.
Well, again, they knew that. Because the Master, I think the Meister said last week that he would never walk in. Anyway, if you know the answer to this, please email it to us, nightswatch@baldmove.com. Move it on.
All right, so right after that, because he says, is it good? I think Tyrion actually asks, is it good news or bad, right?
Right.
And he says both.
Right.
And like right after that, they do a transition back to King's Landing, and...
Ned gets his raven.
Gets his raven, right? And who's there to help him out with that message?
Peter Baelish.
Imagine that. And he pretty much drops, that, is there any news there you'd like to share with your wife?
Right.
And then, Eddard doesn't trust this. I don't think Eddard trusts this guy.
He's wound a bit tight with Peter, I think.
Yeah. Is there a history there?
Yeah, they actually talk about it a little bit later in the episode. When Ned first meets him, he's like... He talks about his brother and is like, yes, I have a token of his esteem.
Oh, that's
it goes
right.
From collarbone to waist.
Cut him. His brother cut him.
The backstory on that, I guess, it's not really a spoiler. It's not. It doesn't go much further than this. But his brother, who was Ned's older brother, was supposed to marry Catelyn. He got killed by the Mad King. But before that happened, when they were betrothed, Littlefinger, who grew up with the Tullys, he was like their ward.
Oh, really?
So he grew up in the same castle house as Kate, or as Kat, and her older sister that we'll meet, Lysa, we'll meet a little bit later. But they grew up in this castle. He fell in love with her, and he challenged Ned's brother, older brother, to a duel. And
well,
Peter,
that was fucking dumb, wasn't it?
Peter's not a warrior. He never was. So the guy, he tried to duck him and not fight him because he didn't want to hurt him. And then he finally enraged him so much that he accepted the duel, and it is only because Catelyn begged him not to kill him that he just left him with a scar.
Huh.
But yeah, they got...
That's some interesting backstory.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I felt like there's some tension there.
Right. And I think he has a lengthy monologue later in the series that talks a little bit about that, but not the full... And that's the kind of stuff you read the books to get the background information on.
Right. And so Peter's... bringing Ned to his wife, and what I find hilarious here is that as we're rolling up to the brothel, you hear some guy out there yelling cunt for sale, right? It's like,
get it while it's hot.
Ned is totally pissed off. It's like, yeah, why are you bringing me here?
Right.
Yeah, like, this is not where I want. Yeah, you think you're funny bringing me here, and basically dishonoring me. Or trying to get some dirt on me is what I felt like he was trying to do,
Right.
And then, which also reinforces my doubts of him being Jon Snow's father.
Oh, yeah.
So, because he's an honorable guy.
Right.
And then he blanches when he gets near a whorehouse.
Right.
So, what the F made him? It must have been one hell of a woman.
It's
That's
a
all
mystery.
I gotta say.
If you want to know more, listen to last week's spoiler section.
This is not a spoiler, up.
Right.
It doesn't make sense to me before even we speculated from the books, after that. And then he grabs Peter and, throws him up against the wall. He's basically about ready to choke his ass out before Cat pops her head out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually the end of the scene. We don't actually get to see anything from there yet. And then we move back to the wall. And find that Jon Snow is jumped by those same guys that he was beating the shit out of earlier.
Sure.
And, I don't know, it's some kind of locker room or something for the night.
Right. It's probably.
It makes me feel like it makes me feel like a scene from a high school movie where the nerd gets picked on in the high school, in the locker room and gym or something.
On the other hand, Castle Black is massive and it's severely undermanned and a lot of it lay in ruin. So there's lots of chances for you to jump someone that you don't like
if
you knew where they were going and coming from.
But before they can cut him open, Tyrion comes in and surprises him.
Make sure he knows that he sees all of their distinctive faces.
Right. And then he also makes sure that they know that he's the brother of the queen.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, just in case you decide to off me too, my sister's the queen.
Right.
We find out something interesting here because he's actually taking the time to learn about each one of them.
Yes. Because Tyrion, that's what he does. He's a study of humanity and the science.
So, and then it's kind of like he explains to Jon Snow each of these guys' situation.
Because Jon starts off a little bit feeling sorry for himself. He's like, you're the only one that told me the truth. My father left
right,
me
it's
up
all
here.
Like noble shit up here. Right.
And my father sent me to this hellhole to die, blah, blah, blah. Although, at this point, he could leave at any time. And retain his honor and titles.
Because he hasn't taken the oath.
He has nothing since he's a bastard.
Right.
That's the whole point. So whatever. And so Peter's like, hey, rich bastard that lived in a castle. This kid here was thrown out of his home when he was 3. This kid here stole some cheese for his starving sister. And he could choose between losing his right hand or going to the wall. And this guy. And oh, by the way, you were trained with the master at arms. And these guys never held a sword. Like,
right.
Pull your head out your ass.
Yeah, the first time they ever held a sword was this morning.
Right, when you beat their asses.
Whooped their butts.
Uh-huh. They don't hate you because you're better than them. They just hate you because you're being an asshole.
That's right. Yeah. So it's kind of like... But I think you see something click in John. It's like...
Yes.
Okay. So, new tactics, right? I'm not here to prove that I'm the biggest badass because I'm already the biggest badass.
Right.
As far
and,
as
and there is
go.
No glory to be the biggest badass of farmhands
exactly.
and stable
yeah.
boys.
Lords do not beat upon
no.
the simple people.
Right.
Even though he's not a lord, but he still has that Stark blood.
He's Lord Snow up at the wall.
And then we go back to King's Landing. With this scene between Cersei and Jaime in what I call the war for Cersei's cunt.
Classic. Love it.
So, here, they have just been informed. Or wait.
Yeah, you gotta back skip up. The scene.
Ned.
Ned's in there with
has
the,
been
in
informed
the
of the dagger.
Right.
Yeah, he's been informed of the dagger. And then between all of those people that decide not to accuse Tyrion.
Right.
It's kind of like a strategic thing.
Littlefinger seems such a stand-up guy here. You really,
yeah.
as a viewer and as Ned, you think this guy is really sticking his neck out for
you. I'm going to protect Ned for you, Kat.
Yep.
Because that's the kind of guy I am.
Now let's get to the war for Cersei.
All right. So Jaime and Cersei find out that Bran's awake.
Uh-huh.
And then, they're like...
Not only that, but that Jaime hired some doofus to try to kill him.
That is the bad news.
Oh, that's right.
That's the bad news.
The attempt on
Bran's
life.
Okay, now, that clicked right there. So the good news is Bran's alive twice.
Yeah. So all you listeners out there are like, you dumbasses.
Yes, because the assassin.
Delete the email. Discard the draft. we got our shit together at the end.
That's right. So, right. And so they're like, what were you thinking, Jaime? And this is where we figure out Jaime must have been the one who coordinated this whole thing, as if it was one of these two.
Right.
So, I don't think
Cersei really, I think she doth protest too much. But Jaime makes it clear that it's all about the family, in particular, him and his sister.
And, you don't think we can outwit a 10-year-old, or outfox a 10-year-old?
And I'll kill every Stark, I'll kill the king, I'll kill everyone, in the whole world until it's just you and me left, sis.
Right.
Next scene, we have Ned and Kat saying goodbye to each other.
She goes back to Winterfell.
And I think the only thing of value here is that she vouches for Peter's.
He's like a brother to me.
And
or a little brother.
Ned says, he still loves you. What's your take on that? Well, just watching this with the fresh eyes.
Well, okay. Obviously, we see that there's a relationship between Kat and Littlefinger.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless, Ned's got it right here. He still loves you.
Yep.
So you know what that gives him? A shit ton of motive not to fucking stick his neck out for Ned.
Yep.
So, there you go.
There you go.
And then after this, we have War Stories, The King's Drunk.
Great scene. Another very long monologue that just serves to talk about backstory.
Yeah, it's an exposition where we've, you know, everybody's first kills, right?
And this is where we meet Sir Selmy, the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. He's the guy that's suffering the King's monologue here.
He's not the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch.
Sorry, Lord Commander of the King's Guard.
Yes, which is what Jaime's a part of.
Yep, he's the leader of that outfit. Well, the whole point of this scene is to show that the king is he sees himself as his wife makes him miserable, his sons are ingrates,
he hates Lannisters up
three times a night to piss, and he's just a bitter old man at what his life has become, basically, that he wasn't as strong as his youth, and all his what he thought things would be when he won the Iron Throne have not turned out to be. And yes, he takes every possible opportunity to abuse and insult Lannister, starting with his squire, Lancel.
Right, who fucks up on Porny's mead or whatever the hell
right.
is going on. So.
And I believe that's Cersei and...
Cousin?
Yeah, I think that's Kevin, their father or their father's brother's son.
Okay.
But anyway...
Yeah, asks him to come in there. Doesn't he ask, like, Jaime to come in there and just, like, yeah, just so he could insult the Lannisters?
He's like, Kingslayer! Which no one says to Jaime's face, by the way. He's like, Kingslayer, get in here. And he's like, who's your first kill? Not counting old men, of course. And you get the kind of the picture that at least Sir Barrister has some admiration for Jaime's past record. That's not all just like, Jaime's not just all bullshit.
Right.
He's got some legit stories to tell.
And he's got some chops as a warrior.
Right.
Even if Ned, you know, belittles that.
And also, there's again...
And also, I want to say that by the end of the scene, I kind of feel like the Captain of the Guard is actually like an all-right kind of dude.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what kind of motivations he has, but he seems pretty honorable.
He's very much a Ned guy.
Yeah, exactly.
There are not too many of those left in the kingdom. And I also think that they give a little bit more of Jaime's backstory and a little bit more sympathy when he talks about the Mad King's last words. He's like, it's the same that he had been saying for the previous hours, which is burn them all. And you find out more about that in the later in the later books. And I can talk more about that in the spoiler section if you'd like.
They also drop kind of a foreshadow, which we'll also cover in the spoiler section.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What was the foreshadow? Can you not even talk about it? Is it too spoilery? It's too foreshadowy?
I think
it's five shadow, isn't it?
Maybe I'll just say it. I'm surrounded by Lannisters. Every time I close my eyes, I see their blonde hair and their smug, satisfied faces.
Yeah.
So we'll cover that more in the spoiler section.
Speaking truer than he knows.
Yep. The next scene is we're with the Dothraki.
Across the Narrow Sea.
And we're with the Khaleesi, which is Daenerys.
Mm-hmm.
And she stops the Horde. Maybe I was confused. I don't remember why she decided to stop the Horde.
She doesn't have a reason. She just does.
Just does it because she's the Khaleesi, right?
Yeah, and I think
I want to break or go pee in the reeds or something.
Right, right.
And her brother Viserys gets immensely upset about being commanded to stop.
Right.
You know, like horse people and their sluts don't command the dragon.
Yep.
But unfortunately, now that she's the Khaleesi, she has a bodyguards,
yeah.
And they basically lasso his fucking neck and start to drag him off, and they're going to cut off his fucking ears.
Right.
So he learns respect to cut off his ears, and you know she stops them. But I think at this point in time, Viserys realizes that the equilibrium in power here has shifted.
No, you got it all wrong.
No?
He doesn't realize, because the first thing he does when he gets his breath is to stand up and say, I am your king! He's like wanting people to kill this guy.
No, I think that's a...
He doesn't get it.
I think he gets it.
No.
That's just his immediate reaction no matter what.
No.
It's trained. It's a muscle memory.
Nope, he does not get it, I don't think. And what's interesting is... tells him to get back on his horse, and I forget what the name of the Blood Rider, the bodyguard, says, no, you walk. That's a huge insult into Dothraki.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the American Old West, right, where if you don't have your horse, you're dead.
Right.
So if you don't have a horse with the Dothraki, then you're going to be left behind.
Yeah, a person that can't ride cannot lead, so a king who's not riding a horse is basically...
He's a servant. He's a slave.
He is a slave. Exactly. The slaves are... If you notice, the ones walking along the horde are the slaves.
Slaves, which I think is...
And Viserys doesn't get that. He doesn't understand.
Was it this scene where they talk about Dothraki don't believe in money?
Yes, it was.
The cities all throw slaves at him and hope that they go on.
Right.
Because they can't be paid off. Because they don't, what the fuck are they going to use money for?
But I love it how, sometimes the call doesn't like how many slaves he gets. Sometimes it's just been that too long since the last battle.
Right.
So, if you're a village and it's like, here's our prettiest girls and the most slaves, and it's been a couple months since the horde has had their edges soaked in blood, then you're still getting sacked.
Yeah, they're some vicious people, man.
Yeah.
And then we go back to the wall in the scene which I call How Do Bear's Balls Taste?
And this is the first time we glimpse the true size and scale of this place.
Yeah, because Benjen's up at the top of the wall, he's waiting on John.
And we show John going from basically his quarters to the wall, up the elevator.
It's like some kind of... It almost reminds me of the service elevators in, because obviously they need to bring supplies up to the top of the wall.
Right.
And Benjen's up there waiting on him because he wants to be there the first time he sees out from the top of the wall.
Mm-hmm. The other thing we see that... the other theme about this is Benjen was not taken too kindly at John's insistence to go on the raiding party. Benjen's like, here at the wall, you have to earn everything you get.
Right.
Just because you're my nephew and my brother's son doesn't mean shit.
Yeah, it's very much a meritocracy.
I mean, he's not even a sworn brother at this point.
Yeah, I mean.
So it shows that John, as much as we want to like him as a viewer, has got a lot of growing up to do.
Yeah, he's ignorant.
Yeah.
So, you can't just... Who the fuck are you? You can't just come out on this shit. You got to prove yourself. You got to take the oath.
Right.
Yeah, it's very militaristic. It's a military style culture here. So, very much a lot of it seems to be based on meritocracy. It doesn't matter if you're a lord or the butcher's boy.
Right.
It depends on how you perform.
Right.
And then I think we see some more clever quips from Tyrion in this scene.
He's sitting there with Yorin in the mess hall, talking about the finer points of eating bear's balls and Dornish girls.
Right. Yeah. What was he asked? What's the strangest thing you've ever ate?
Yeah.
Do Dornish girls count?
Right. What do you think about the way Tyrion handled Benjen? Because Benjen comes down kind of in a bad mood from his confrontation with Jon, and he comes in at the tail end of Tyrion basically speaking ill of the Night's Watch and says, well, you think we're just a bunch of jokes. And I thought Tyrion, he's basically the man of reason, saying, look, I believe there are no such things as giants and trolls and White Walkers, and that the raiders, the wildlings, are just the same as you and I, except for they happened to be on the wrong side of the wall when it was built.
Right. Yeah. I think his stance is actually a pretty good stance. I mean, for anyone that hasn't experienced North of the Wall... except for those three guys at the very beginning of the first episode, there's no reason for anyone to believe that there's White Walkers or any of this strange shit.
Right.
It's like, just near the sea. We have people who live near the sea say they see mermaids all the time.
Right. And and Benjen just doesn't get to Tyrion because he basically says, oh, yeah, well, you've never been north of the wall, so you just don't even know what you're talking about. And at that, Tyrion's like, whatever,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, okay. And I kind of get the feeling that, Tyrion's beginning to feel like his stay has been worn out.
Uh-huh.
So, and we go back to across the narrow sea, and we see Daenerys is kind of really embracing the culture, and her position as Khaleesi. She's learning the language, the culture. She's very inquisitive, asking all these questions. Obviously, she's asserting herself, as we saw with the last scene with her where she stopped the whore just because she's Khaleesi.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, one of her maids in a waiting or whatever kind of passes.
So I think her name's Eerie, I believe. Finds out, knows that she's hasn't had a flow of blood for the last two
months. Right, when was the last time you menstruated, right? Uh-huh. So I don't remember.
Very technical of
then
you, Matt.
It's the Great Stallion has left the present for you. So I guess we get a little insight into their mythology there.
That's the stork.
The
stork, comes by and leaves a baby.
The Great Stallion. Chimney. It sounds like the Great Stallion does a lot more to you than just leave a baby at the door.
Well, then, so we also have a little scene here connected where Jorah and one of the Blood Riders, right? Again, I can't remember what his name is, talk about the merits of armor versus...
Oh, they're comparing swords.
Jerkin, yeah.
My Schwartz is bigger than yours.
Right.
I
thought this, the only thing interesting about this scene was that it shows, it gives us the first concrete idea of how Jorah views his past. Because we talked about this in the last two episodes, is what do you think this guy, you know, it's kind of like cryptic, but here he basically says, yeah, my father's a great warrior, and I disgraced him. And he didn't say it like with any smirk or sense of irony. I think he really...
You think he's come to grips with that?
Yeah, I think I again.
Like, I think I get the feeling he was put in a position that he couldn't really whatever. He sold slaves, right?
Right.
I think he was in a position where he didn't have much of a choice.
Well, if you'd like, I can talk about that in the spoiler section.
We can talk about that in the spoiler section. So, but that's the feeling I get, and you know, I'm still undecided whether or not he has like other than fatherly feelings for Daenerys, which we also discussed last episode. But
did not seem to...
I like the guy.
Right.
But other than that, I don't know. I'm still undecided about where his loyalties lie and what his purpose here is.
Didn't seem to like very much that Daenerys is pregnant.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I got to run to Kothar or wherever it was to get some supplies out.
Well, that was after one of her peeps comes out and was like, we need something other than horse meat.
Right.
And then, you know, what the fuck do you need something other than horse meat? Because, you know... She's pregnant or whatever.
Right.
And so he's like, well, I'll go slay a goat. And I'm thinking, that is not much of an upgrade from horse flesh.
I don't know. I've not tried horse. And I've not had goat either. So I was like, I couldn't weigh the relative merits.
I don't know. There seems to be more, I don't know. The bigger the animal, the better the taste.
Really? But horse, I thought the more a muscle is used, the gamier it's going to be. So I
possibly
think a goat would be closer to cow. Where, you know, then it would be a horse, which, especially a fucking Dothraki horse, which is going to be ran until it dies.
Yeah, I don't know. Goat, horse, doesn't flip a coin.
Yeah. All right.
All I'm saying is that didn't sound like, you know, yeah, I'll go slay a goat because that's so much better than horse.
Moving on.
We come back to the wall again, and we see Snow's train again, and some of what Tyrion has said has kind of sunk in, because now he's not just like totally embarrassing these guys.
He's actually teaching
them. He's teaching them tricks.
Right.
You know, he's trying to earn their respect.
Right.
Earn their respect, because these are the guys, what, you take the oath for life?
Mm-hmm.
So these are the guys you're going to be spending the rest of your life with. Then there's no reason to have everybody pissed off at
you. Not only that, but these are the men that your life may depend on.
Right.
Do you
want to make them better?
Exactly.
So... yeah, I think he's kind of realized he's not here to show off. It's now he's all about the team building.
Right. This scene kind of flows naturally into Tyrion being kind of have a side conference with the Lord Commander and the Meister of the Night's Guard. And they're saying, look, we're in dire straits up here.
Oh, that's like the recruiter guy, right? The Meister?
Yep. His name's Aemon, and we find out a little bit more about him later. But he's like, please, when you go back to the King's Landing, please ask your brother, your brother-in-law and your sister, the king, or your brother-in-law, the king, and your sister, the queen, for more men. Because we, you know, Castle Black barely has 1,000 men. At the time of this, the book happening, there's like 12 castles along the wall. The Castle Black is in the middle. There's a castle over there by the sea, and there's another castle that mans this gap in the wall that's across the other sea. There's like a, you know, like a couple mile gap, and they've a light garrison in those two castles, but all the castles in between that man all the other gates are completely abandoned. And in fact, Castle Black is half in ruins. Like, you kind of see that, how like the boards are kind of like, you know, and they don't have...
It's in misrepair.
Yeah, he's like, basically, we've got basically old men and boys. We barely have enough weapons to arm them, enough food to feed them. We have no extra to improve our fortifications or do patrols or the things that we have to do.
Right, and again, he reinforces that the wildings are
on massing up.
They're moving south, and there's word of the White Walkers again,
which Tyrion doesn't want to hear. But it seems like he's taking this a little bit more to heart, or at least he's
okay. So there's wildings; those for sure exist,
right?
And they're not exactly
friendly.
You don't
want them invading the entire north.
Right.
The other thing is
that... I get the idea they're kind of like a bunch of barbarian tribes or whatever, right?
Right, right.
So if they ever move south en masse, that would be a bad idea.
And I like the line that the Meister says, you know, we've got word from the Citadel, which is the, that's where all the Meisters are trained, and they actually are the, like, the, they write the Farmer's Almanac, I guess, or Westeros.
Right, because they're getting reports are coming about, you know, winter is coming.
That's one of their primary jobs, is to track the seasons and tell when winter is going to be coming, and they actually send out white crows to bear those messages.
Really? So albino crows.
Yeah, so they're seeing that, and I like the line that he said, you know, eventually all Starks are right.
Winter is coming.
It eventually is true. And this one, they say, is going to be long and dark, and they talk about the White Walkers.
Right, because it's been, I think...
9 years.
Yeah, previously we heard Tyrion talking, I think it was in the previous scene at the Wall, where mm-hmm. it's like, how many winters have you seen? You know,
right.
Three or four, you know? And
when he was
when I was born, it was the winter was 3 years long.
Right.
And then they were talking about this was the longest summer in history, or mm-hmm. recent history anyway, is like 8 or 9 years.
Right.
So now it's on its way back.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of bugs me. I'm going to tell you, are the seasons supernatural here?
They don't ever deal with this in the book.
Okay, because, like, I'm thinking about cosmology here
yeah.
and how winters and seasons occur scientifically, and the shit's not just, I mean...
My thought is...
Are there gravity wells in space?
The solar system looks exactly like the credit scene. You've got this little clockwork mechanical sun and all this clock. That's what the world really looks like.
Okay.
Problem solved.
Gotcha.
So when that little, it needs wound up by the seven gods, it gets cold. And
gotcha.
But so, yeah, there is no real explanation ever given.
Yeah, because that shit always bothers me.
Yeah. It's a cool idea, but.
Yeah, it's a cool idea, but if you can't explain it scientifically. Or, I mean, I guess I kind of hate it when people just kind of write things off as it's magic.
George R. R. Martin's is listening to his podcast right now and say, yeah, I'll explain the winters when you explain dragons, fucker.
What they're so, like?
Maybe he's like
dinosaurs.
Yeah, but not flying and breathe fire.
Okay, well, I got this Discovery DVD.
Uh-huh.
That the real story behind dragons about how they could have existed.
Stop. Dragons
it's not. It's not a real. It's saying that how biologically things like that could exist. Like the what's it? Is it the bombardier beetle that shoots fire and
it
shit like that?
Yeah, but it's not like they're trumping that up just a wee bit. I think.
Well, can animals shoot shit that's
on
you?
Fire? Can they? Yeah, I get whatever. We should move on. Dragons aren't real.
I'm not saying they're real.
Neither are
9 year
winters. Okay, let's go. Okay. Let's just leave it at that. I just think it's funny that people would accept that
fantasy tropes.
Yeah, right.
Fantasy tropes. So we go back to Across the Narrow Sea, and we see a softcore porn scene here, and
very soft.
And Danny tells, Danny tells Drogo, it's going to be a boy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a boy. I know it's a boy.
And we can see that she is slowly wrapping him around her little finger.
Oh, yeah. She is, she's owning that horde.
The power cannot be denied.
And that's pretty much it for that scene, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was short. Not much there. And then we go to the next scene, which I call taking a piss off the wall. So that's the whole reason Tyrion wanted to come
He's
to the wall,
He's checking off
right?
a mark on his bucket
that's
list.
That's right. It's a bucket list, like Super Bowl.
Right.
Gen Con, taking a piss off the wall.
Oh, yeah.
So
that'd be on my list.
It's on there. It's definitely on there. And this is basically this is just a goodbye scene. Tyrion and Jon say their goodbyes.
There's a little foreshadow because he did promise to, you know, give some words to Bran.
Right. And there's kind of an important thing he says. It's like, well, if you're going to be a cripple, it's better off to be a rich cripple.
Yep. Take it from me.
So, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, like, yeah, he can't walk, but it's not so bad.
Right.
You know. Was there anything else about this scene you'd like to discuss?
Nope.
I think we can go on to...
I think this is the scene where I think Jon finally accepts Tyrion as a friend, or at least not a foe.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you've given me a lot of solid advice, and you're the only one telling me the truth, and now you're going to do solid for me and my brother, so they actually left, parted as friends there.
And then we get to the best scene of this episode.
It's pretty good.
The dancing master.
Mm-hmm.
We come into the scene, and it's basically a guy standing in shadows, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you're late, boy. Next mm-hmm. time you'll be here at midday.
Right.
And then you see Arya, and she's like, well, who are you? And it's like, I'm Cereal Farrell. your dancing master,
right,
or instructor or whatever. And so he has two wooden swords, and he throws one to Arya, which of course she misses. And he's like, "Tomorrow, you'll catch that." Again, maybe this is just my daughter coming through, but I think this is the best scene of this episode.
So he's a total badass, right?
He is a badass.
You find out just a little bit from what he says. He's the first sword of Braavos, which sounds badass.
Actually, does he say that?
Yes.
He says that in this scene?
Yes. Yes, he does.
Okay.
He says he's the first sword of the Braavos, appointed, well, appointed by the Sea Lord of I'm the first sword appointed by the Sea Lord of Braavos, which means something if you know about the world that this book inhabits. But
yeah, obviously he has a totally different style than the Westeros.
Yeah, that's called the Water Dancing.
The Water Dance, or the Braavos.
If you look it up in the Song of Ice and Fire wiki, is basically they're pioneering fencing.
Fencing. Mm-hmm.
Where everyone else is still, you know, basically going around with claymores and broadswords. They're actually going quick and and one-hand rapier type stuff.
Yeah, I get the idea that wherever this Braavos is, it's an enlightened culture. Because he makes a statement there. He's like, "Do you know that the body of a man is mostly water?"
Right.
Which is, you know, kind of correct.
Right.
And he's got this, you know, it's obviously a totally different style, because he's like, you know, this is not the Westeros knight style where it's like hack and slash. This is, you know, you bend and move and, you know, you only use one hand. You only need one hand.
Right, which I thought was great because Ned took stock in Arya's gifts and also looked at her weapon and said, "I'm not going to have my guy, you know, train her."
Yeah, because it's not going to work.
It's not going to work. I'm going to get an expert at this stuff.
Yes, and it kind of speaks to Ned's connections, because this guy's obviously a foreigner.
Oh, well, but
we don't see any other Braavos-style fighting in this.
Braavos is the largest of the free cities, the ones that are not under the Seven Kingdoms.
Okay.
And did you notice, like, the main theme slowly start building over the lesson?
Yes.
And then it shows, pans the Ned watching them, and then you hear, like, the sounds of warfare.
Oh, yeah. This is, because you notice when at first he's watching it and he's got a smile on his face.
Uh-huh.
He's like, "Yeah, this is perfect for her. Right. I have found, like, unlike Sansa, I know what to do with Arya."
Right.
And then, but I get the feeling that with the combat, he's like having some kind of fucking flashback.
Charlie's
in the wire! You know, it's like, dude, and he's like, "Oh my God, it's all, oh, it's coming back to me." It's like, either that or it finally dawns on him that, holy shit, she is going to have to employ this at some point in time.
That's exactly what I put in my notes. Is he having a flashback or a premonition?
Yeah. So I think it's both.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of a combo. It's like, as much as I don't want it to happen, she is going to have to use this.
Wait till she goes on her first date is all I got to say, Ned. We'll see what's going through your head.
Yeah.
That's the episode.
That is the episode. We end with the Dancing Master, which is my favorite part.
So should I instigate the outro?
Let's go to the outro. Folks, if you want to get off here now and not hear the spoilers, you need to hit the stop button on your player right now.
Not just yet, because we got a couple wrap up. If you want to keep up with all of our podcasts, we do one on Game of Thrones, Justified, Mad Men, Breaking Bad, Walking Dead at this point. You can find all of our posts and podcasts at baldmove.com. If you'd like to send us feedback,
twitter.com /baldmove.
At baldmove, facebook.com/baldmove, and email us at nightswatch@baldmove.com. We also, since we're just really getting this podcast off the ground, and there's a lot of competition out there for a Game of Thrones podcast, you can help support us by leaving us positive reviews on iTunes and subscribing. That gets us, when people search for Game of Thrones podcast, we get higher up on the rankings, the better we do on there. And if you want to directly contribute to help us pay for our bandwidth, keep our disc spinning and whatnot, use our Amazon affiliate link at amazon.baldmove.com. And what that does is when you order something from Amazon, it tacks on like a $50 surcharge. It goes right to us.
Well, that kind of sounds bad. You don't pay anything extra.
Oh, right. That's how it works. You actually get the same great deal, same great shipping. It costs you nothing, and Amazon gives us a few pennies. That's how I knew it was one
of the other. Yeah. It doesn't cost you anything. We just take a slice of Amazon's pie.
Right. So if you'd like to do that, it'd be great. And that's all I got. If we're ready to say goodbye and kick it to spoilers.
Yeah, let's say goodbye. Let's kick it with Alert's theme song there.
All right. See you next week. And we're back with spoiler section. Did you have anything that you wanted to hit me with there, Mad Brew?
I have two things bolded in my notes. Okay, the first thing is, which I dropped a clue to in our coverage, was the war story scene of the first kills. Mm-hmm. Robert Baratheon lays down a comment and says, "I'm surrounded by Lannisters. Every time I close my eyes, I see their blonde hair and their smug, satisfied faces." Having said that, did he not notice that his own kid has blonde hair and a smug, satisfied face?
Well, see, I think I'm taking that for, like, that's his wife's boy. So, like, even my kids are Lannisters, in a way of speaking. He has no idea how true that those are actually purebred, incestual Lannisters.
Yeah.
You'd think he might question, since he's fathered so many bastard men, or little girls and little boys, and they all look like him.
Yeah, he's dense.
The Baratheon line is very, the genetics are pretty strong.
Yeah. Obviously he's dense, but yeah, that line he dropped was just such a clear foreshadow for what's to come. I loved it. And then also, I know we discussed this last podcast about the possible origins of Jon Snow, and watching this, I kind of, you know, like, every time I see Benjen and Jon, like, I don't see Benjen interacting, like, I didn't see Benjen interacting with Rob or any of the other Stark children a lot when we first saw him. But he definitely has a good relationship with Jon Snow.
Yep.
And so I thought maybe since he had taken the Black and he cannot break the vow of celibacy, that maybe he broke the vow of celibacy and that is Jon.
Huh. I know that's not one of the leading theories, but I mean, at this point in the series, that's something you could say.
You know, especially considering that from the information we have, considering the other theories, Jon Snow wouldn't have any way of figuring it out without introducing new characters.
I think that you could easily explain their closeness and the fact that that is Ned's, you know, that's his nephew. He's the oldest boy, so he's probably been the one interested in martial arts the longest. And also that since
he was
a
probably
bastard,
going to be there anyways.
And since he was a bastard, he probably had his heart set on the wall for it. Sounds like he's been like, "Would you take me to the wall? Would you play me to the wall?" For like who knows how many seasons.
Okay, yeah, it's easily explained, but I thought that might be a possible alternative theory.
Right.
I don't know how solid it is. Let's talk about... You had some backstory you were thinking about discussing in here about either Jorah or...
Well, I want to talk about Jaime a little bit. That the thing to remember is, like, you know, when people call him the Kingslayer, this was a king, the Mad King, needed to be slayed. And also that at the time, Jaime was the youngest the Night's Watch ever to be appointed.
Kingsguard.
The Kingsguard. God damn it. I can't do that. He's the youngest of the Kingsguard ever to be appointed. And he was like kind of like a boy. So it's like, it's, you know, after reading a couple more of the books and kind of seeing the world through his eyes, I find it harder to outright dislike him, especially when you see how poorly he's treated. Like, he's like, you know, you have to sit there and stand outside my door while I drink and fuck girls right. that are not your sister, who he, you know, it's like, you basically, he does that as an insult, and he's, you know, pretty much takes it all. And I'm not going to say he's honorable like Ned, but I don't know that Ned is an ideal world for the, or a man for the world of Ice and Fire, Song of Ice and Fire either. Let's see, I want to talk about, what else do I have bolded? Also, you know, the Mad King, the thing that made Jaime kill him is because the Targaryen King, you find this out in, like, think book three, had the belief that all dragons were immune to fire, and he was one of the dragons, and he actually had this secretive sect build a whole bunch of Greek fire, basically the Westeros version of Greek fire, and store it all over the city, so at his command the whole city would explode and burn with this Greek fire.
Whoa, is that still there in the city?
Well, spoiler alert, yes it is, and it is. It does come out to turn out to be relevant. As the Kingsguard, he heard him making his plan that when Robert gets to the city and it all looks lost, that he was going to burn everyone in the city. And that the King's Landing is a huge city.
So Jaime actually saved everybody.
Jaime saved the whole population of of King's Landing, and no one he's basically carried this to himself, and you know, bore the label of Kingslayer this whole time.
That doesn't seem very Jaime-like. He must have plans for the Greek Fire.
No, like I said, I mean,
why wouldn't you let that out?
Because he's got his own little weird notion bullshit. Of honor.
But yeah, I mean, what? I don't know. What honor is there not letting people know that there's dangerous Greek fire in the fucking...
Well, because he's, you know, basically it's like he served the king. Like, he did so many disgusting things because he was the king's guard and he thought that's what you should do. And the one he couldn't stomach was all his innocent people, men, women, and children dying. And that's when he finally defied it. But I think Jaime's got a code of honor. It's just weird. It's different than, like, a Ned code of honor.
Yeah, obviously he's Dooney's sister doggy style.
Right. We talked about... Jorah and Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, which I used appropriately, find Mormont being father and son. And we find even more about that in the series.
Now, why John did he have Snow to leave sword. All the way? I mean, why did he... Is he a spy for...
I don't know. I feel like I should know this because I've seen the series and I've read the book, but it's kind of... He might...
It's like, because that's an wow, that's some juicy information. Better send that off to the fucking King's Landing.
I definitely, he's an informer and trying to get on the good side of the court, but I don't think, you know, he obviously has a lot of loyalty to Daenerys, and that's a conflict for him. And I guess he's maybe trying to play both sides there.
Do we know where he went or why he went?
The backstory with him is the reason he's gotten such debt, he married a very beautiful woman. And she
high maintenance.
She was extremely high maintenance. And, you know, he was a wealthy, well-off dude, but he wasn't of infinite wealth and taste. And he took her away because, you know, all of his family's from the north. The Mormons are big up north. He took her from south. I forget exactly where she's from, but she's from south where there's lots of silks and all this stuff. And he took her up to north where it's cold and harsh. And instead of adapting like Kate, she basically was like, this sucks. I hate it. I hate you. Blah, blah, blah. So he actually ran into huge amounts of debts trying to bring singers and dancers and all the trappings of the keeper happy, and ended up to try to keep her in love with him, sold some kind of like despicable people as slaves instead of killing them,
right,
as he should have. And that's what got him in trouble and got him.
So he's not that bad of a dude.
He's not that bad of a dude.
He just has poor judgment skills.
Yeah, he couldn't stand up to the woman. So that's the kind of backstory about him and why he seems like a decent dude. Or how would that guy get mixed up with slavery? Well, there you go.
Yeah. All right.
That's all that I've got for as far as there's lots of stuff I could talk about more, but it kind of comes up later in the series and. We've already been yapping for an hour and 50 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything else we can actually squeeze out of this episode. Yeah. So I wouldn't say there's a lot of super insights or a lot of foreshadowing in this episode.
Another one of those was building.
It was a lot of introductions.
A lot of build-up.
And laying the foundation of the political intrigue.
Yeah, so. I mean, this a lot. These first three episodes are basically weaving all the connections between these characters. So then right around episode, I forget, you know, five or six, when it starts putting its foot down to the gas... It pretty much is breakneck till the end of the series.
Yeah.
Season, anyway. So that's all I got.
That's all I have.
All right. I'll see you guys next week.